Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sarah, Dorit Bat Sarah, and Moshe Ben Miriam, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Hasdai, Pesach Seb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Mir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. We predicted on this program for quite a few years now that Donald Trump would be indicted and would face the prospect of possibly going to prison once he leaves office, because he's someone whose reckless disregard for the laws and whose reckless behavior leads to situations where he could be indicted. And so this is something I spoke about even while Donald Trump was president. For years I predicted once he leaves office that this was a real danger that he would face, and that was one of the reasons why he wanted so badly to get reelected. While he was president, they couldn't touch him because they have a Justice Department policy that sitting presidents are not going to be indicted. I think that's a bad policy. I think that if a president breaks the law, that nobody should be above the law, and the president should also face the danger of indictment. But anyway, that has not been the tradition in the United States, and so Trump was safe as long as he was president. When I predicted that Trump would eventually be indicted, I remember many times over the years, people said, no, you don't, and I'm talking about people who supported Trump and people who were against Trump, the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump people, both of them, generally speaking, said to me, no, that's not going to happen. We've never had a president or a former president indicted. They're just not going to do it because it's too politically charged and it would divide the country and too many people would get excited over it, and that's just not going to happen. There may be investigations, there may be impeachments, there may be trials after an impeachment, like a Senate trial. But even when he leaves office, they're not going to indict him. That's just not going to happen. That's what most people said to us over the years. They didn't think what we were saying was realistic. But now we see that there is a very serious federal investigation into Trump's behavior and actions before he left office. And, you know, to me, the most serious thing that Trump did, and I think it's extremely serious, is that he tried to change the results of an election. He lost the election in 2020 by over 7 million votes. The claim that the election was stolen from him is absolutely ridiculous, laughable. The election was not stolen from him. By the way, Trump always claims that the other side was dishonest. If he loses anything in life, he's always done this his whole life. I remember when Ted Cruz defeated him in the Iowa caucuses, he claimed that it was rigged, and he claimed that Ted Cruz didn't really win the caucuses fairly. He is just a hopeless sore loser. And, you know, people could be sore losers, okay, that's one thing, but, you know, to actually try to change the results of an election, that is fascism. That's dictatorial behavior already. That's what fascists and dictators do in third world countries. That's something we've never had an American president try to do before. So this was really, really like staging a coup, because I hate Joe Biden. I think he's senile. I think he's a terrible president and a joke as a leader. But he did win the election because Trump ran such a chaotic and insane presidency that he alarmed the majority of the American people. The majority of American people voted against him. That's just a fact. I know the Trumpsters don't want to accept that, but the fact is most Americans did not like Trump's presidency. He was never popular and never supported by the majority of the American people. Now, we have a situation here where there's an issue here that I think we should discuss. The phony right, which is Donald Trump, Bibi Netanyahu, people on the phony right, whether it's Trump in America or Netanyahu in Israel, when they get elected to office, even though they promise to drain the swamp and they promise that they're going to go against the establishment and they promise they're going to change everything, all of that goes out the window. It's all a bluff. In reality, they go along with the establishment. They figure they have to do it in order to stay in power, in order to stay in office. Otherwise, the establishment will find a way to get rid of them. That's the way they look at things. But eventually they get screwed by the establishment anyway, even though they appease the establishment, even though they bow down to the establishment, even though they cave in and surrender to the establishment, which both Trump and Netanyahu did during the time they were in office. In the end, they both get screwed. Netanyahu has been indicted now. He has 3 different indictments pending against him, and you know, they're doing everything they can to put him in prison. I don't know if they'll succeed, but you know, they have serious charges against him in Israel. The only answer that we always advocated was that you have to seriously go against the establishment, confront the establishment. And when I say confront the establishment, I don't mean with a stupid stunt like the January 6th riot that Trump incited. And he did incite a riot there. I mean, he was encouraging people to violently storm the Capitol. That's stupidity. That's idiotic. You're not going to storm the Capitol and seize power like in Zaire or in some third world country. That's in the United States, that's just not going to happen. It was very stupid what Trump suggested. I'm talking about real, meaningful action. When you're elected to the presidency of the United States, or if you're elected Prime Minister of Israel, there are many meaningful, powerful actions that you can take to change the establishment and change the way things are run. And that's what your goal should be when you become a leader. Your immediate goal should be to confront the establishment and to replace and change the establishment through legal means, but to replace and change the establishment. The first thing Trump did when he was elected president was he appointed in his cabinet all establishment cronies, you couldn't get more swamp than the people he appointed in his cabinet. Almost all of his appointees were swamp appointees. He completely betrayed his supporters, who are so stupid, no matter what he does, they'll always support him anyway. They'll jump off a building for him, they'll jump off a cliff for him. And believe me, he wouldn't do that for them. He's not loyal. Donald Trump is loyal to no one except himself. Not even to his wives, he's not loyal. He'll betray anybody. But the first thing Trump did when he was elected, he made the head of ExxonMobil, this multinational billionaire who's betrayed the United States over and over again, his Secretary of State. And of course, his Secretary of State betrayed him. He made this weird, crazy, so-called general who looks like he belongs in a mental asylum, his Secretary of Defense. And of course, the Secretary of State he appointed, the Secretary of Defense he appointed, all these people betrayed him in the end. They quit and they betrayed him and they wrote books against him and they attacked him. And I mean, but Trump thought he was going to co-opt the establishment and become part of the establishment. And he became part of the establishment. He became part of the swamp in every way. And he figured that this would enable him to avoid the type of confrontations that he really didn't want. And so Trump not only appointed establishment people to almost every cabinet position, he also increased the government budget, the federal budget, more than Obama was doing, at a faster rate than Obama. He passed budgets, and I'm talking about pre-corona, I'm not talking about after the coronavirus, I'm talking about pre-coronavirus, before corona even came into the picture. He was increasing government spending 50% more than Obama was doing. 50% more. After telling us that the debt that Obama had accumulated was threatening to make the United States bankrupt. And after saying all this, he was outspending Obama in almost every area. And increasing the debt more than Obama. He did nothing to fight against what the establishment was doing. Did nothing. And so we see that, you know, we see, for instance, he promised he was going to build a wall. He could have built that wall. He could have transferred funds from other projects. And he had a Republican Congress when he was first elected. He could have built that wall easily. That's not a hard thing to do, to build a wall on the southern border. That is not a hard thing to do for a president of the United States who had a Republican Congress and who was just elected and had a mandate from the people to do this. And there's certainly nothing illegal about building a wall on the southern border. And so there was no way to stop him if he had decided to do it, but he didn't. He didn't even start building anything. For the first 2 years he was in office, and then after 2 years, after the midterm elections in 2018, he decided that to satisfy his constituency, he's going to pretend he's building the wall. He ended up building maybe 5% of the wall that he promised to build. He said it was going to be a big, beautiful wall. By the way, he didn't build a big, beautiful wall anywhere. Even the wall he built was not big and beautiful. It was not the type of big wall that is needed to deter illegal aliens from entering the United States on the southern border. And he only built it in about 5% of the southern border. And when I say 5%, I'm talking about the parts of the southern border where it's possible to build a wall. Obviously, you have the Rio Grande River. You can't build a wall there. And I'm not talking about that. I'm speaking about the areas where it is possible to build a wall and let me tell you something. Walls do prevent people from entering the country. I'm not saying they're foolproof. I'm not saying in every single case. But the wall would prevent the overwhelming majority of illegals who would try to be crossing that border. The overwhelming majority would not cross if there was a giant wall across the whole border. It wouldn't happen. That would have made a big difference. And then even if another president comes into office later on, it'd be very hard for them to rip apart and tear down the wall. That wouldn't be very popular. So he could have created a permanent fact on the ground that would have been very helpful to that could have saved America. Do you realize he could have saved America from tens of millions of illegal aliens who are going to be crossing that border because he didn't build the wall, because he didn't keep his promise? Do you realize what that broken promise means for the future of the United States? And the Trumpsters didn't realize, they're so dumb, and they're so full of crap, and they're so full of hot air, these Trumpsters. Make America great again. He couldn't even build a wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. He didn't build a wall. He didn't keep even that promise. What a joke. And he tried to appease the establishment. Did it work? Look, they're going after him now. They want his scalp. They want to indict him and put him in prison now. It didn't help him. It didn't save him that he tried to kiss the behind of everyone of all the establishment bureaucrats in Washington that don't want a wall. It didn't help him and all the media leftists and Hollywood leftists that he tried to appease. It didn't help him at all. And of course, he supported the transgenders and the gays, and he said that he's the most gay president in history. That's what he told us. And when he was asked about Buttigieg on Fox News, he was asked about Buttigieg marrying another man. He said he thinks it's wonderful, and he thinks gay marriage is wonderful. He thinks gay marriage is wonderful. When you had a clerk in Kentucky who tried to defy the Supreme Court ruling, which was an outrageous ruling, forcing everybody to accept gay marriage, what an outrageous ruling, and Trump didn't criticize the ruling at all, and in fact said it's established law. He said, this is established law, now we got to accept it. And of course, Trump has supported the transgenders, saying that he would be happy to open up the bathrooms in all of his facilities in Trump Tower and all of his facilities and all of his hotels, be happy to open it to either sex, and that he doesn't say anything wrong with transgenders either. He thinks it's fine. So he supports the transgenders. He supports the gay agenda. He called himself the most pro-gay president in history. He didn't build the wall. This is making America great again? Are you that stupid? Ann Coulter's the only honest one. She supported him stupidly, and she admitted she was stupid to do it. She admitted she was wrong, and she finally went against him because of this. And boy, they shut her out. That was it. All the Trumpsters, that was the end of her. That she dared to tell the truth about how Trump betrayed his voters and betrayed his promises. And it doesn't work. If he was doing it because he wants to appease the establishment, they're still going after him. It didn't help. It's not going to help. They'll betray you and stab you in the back no matter what you do. You might as well go head to head and try to replace all the Washington bureaucrats and cut all the government programs and veto all the big budgets and fight against all the big spending and do what a conservative constitutional president is supposed to do. And build the wall and do all these other things and go against the gays and the transgenders and the others that will guarantee the destruction of the United States. God will not allow America to exist. If America continues to murder tens of millions of unborn babies, if America, and America will continue despite the Roe v. Wade decision. They're going to continue to murder millions. They're still murdering millions of babies. That hasn't stopped. And as long as America murders tens of millions of babies, and as long as America goes against Israel, and as long as America promotes homosexuality and transgenders and all this other sodomite insanity, and as long as America doesn't defend her own borders, God is not going to let this country survive. And I know that your God is Donald Trump. This is who you burn incense to and worship now. But with all due respect, there is a God more powerful than him. He doesn't think so. The reason, you know, Donald Trump was always asked what his favorite verse in the Bible is. They asked him many times, and he couldn't come up with an answer because he never read the Bible. And the reason he never read the Bible is because he's not in the Bible. If he's not in the Bible, it isn't worth reading. Anyway, by the way, this type of arrogance and egotism and megalomania is something God detests. He detests leaders and he detests people who are arrogant, megalomaniacal people, cruel people. Donald Trump is cruel and vicious. And someone who used to brag on the Howard Stern show about all the adulterous affairs he had while he was married. He was sleeping with prostitutes in Moscow and other places while his wife was already 8 months pregnant. I mean, he's disloyal. He's cruel. He's just a vicious, low-life person. And yet you have Jews who Orthodox Jews who ran around saying he's the Mashiach. He's the Messiah, literally speaking like this. You had Orthodox Jews who went down January 6th to participate in the riot, in the storming of the Capitol even. What morons. This is what they do instead of being loyal to their own people in Israel, and they're willing to go to jail for Donald Trump. This is what they're willing to do. They're scum! Scum! Now, Netanyahu, same story in Israel. He could have replaced all the extreme left judges on the Israeli Supreme Court. He could have changed the whole situation there. He could have made Israel a country with a completely different country with a completely different policy. He could have turned Israel into a Jewish state. He had the power and the mandate to do it. He could have done it. But instead, he did everything he could to block any attempt to reform the Supreme Court, to change the fact that the left, the radical left, rules over all of Israel's institutions, even though they're only a small minority of the population. All the things that he could have done to change that situation, he didn't do, and he blocked and fought against those who wanted to change it. He fought to defend the radical left control of the Supreme Court and all these institutions in Israel, and despite that, they gave him. He's facing three indictments already, and the prospect of possibly going to prison if he's convicted. People on the phony right never learn. That's why the phony right is so dangerous. They don't learn. They don't learn. The first thing Menachem Begin did. Menachem Begin was the first Likud, so-called right-wing prime minister, to get elected in Israel in 1977. After 19 years of the Socialist Labor Party being in power, the first thing Menachem Begin said was, we're not going to change the Supreme Court. We're not going to replace any of it. We're not going to do... The extreme left can continue to control everything. What a joke. What a farce. And you know, of course Israel pays the price for that. And just like America's paying the price. The difference is Israel's not going to be literally destroyed, because God promised that Israel is not going to be destroyed, and that the Jewish people are going to return to Israel, and this third return is going to be the final return. It doesn't mean that many Jews, God forbid, can be killed, and there could be terrible consequences, terrible suffering and pain, but not complete destruction. America, on the other hand, can face complete destruction. If America's overrun by third world hordes coming in and taking over and changing the whole nature of the country and turning America into a third world banana republic, which America is on its way to becoming, that's the end of America. America doesn't exist anymore if that happens. America's finished. That's the end of it. And Donald Trump did not stop that when he could have. And despite that, despite that, look what's happening to him. And nobody's learned the lessons, and nobody's figured this out. There was a conservative Republican running for president who intended to take on the establishment and intended to try to change things dramatically and intended to veto big budget bills and intended to really take everybody on, and that was Ted Cruz. But you didn't want him. You wanted Donald Trump. And so, here you go. Open borders, transgenders, most gay president in history. And despite all that, I think he's going to get indicted. I think it's coming. And not only that, people wonder, well, if he's indicted, is he going to be convicted? It's going to be hard to convict a former president. It's going to be hard. I think he's going to get indicted, and I think he's going to get convicted. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think so. I think he's going to be indicted and found guilty. I think he's going to be convicted because I think the evidence against him is very, very strong. The lesson to be learned is the right thing to do is not to sell out your principles and not to compromise on your basic principles, but to fight for what's right and be idealistic and stand up for the truth and fight for the truth. And be a great leader like King David was, or like some of the other kings in Israel's history were, who were righteous kings. Stand up for truth and fight for justice, and stand up for the noble principles and the morals that could make this a better world and that would make this a better world. The only people in Israel now doing that, really doing that, are the Hilltop Youth. That's why we in JTF support the Hilltop Youth. And we urge you to do it too. There are two ways you can support those who are not caving in and not capitulating and who stand for the truth in Israel, the true heroes of our generation. There are two ways for you to support the Hilltop Youth. One is by going to our Hebrew website, hayamin.org. And when you get to hayamin.org, the site is in Hebrew, but there is a donate button in English. There are a couple of words in English on the top. Go to the top, there's a big donate button in English. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes you can very easily and conveniently make a generous donation to help the Hilltop Youth. That's online. By the way, all of your donations made online are tax deductible. The ones online are all to VJA, to the Voice of Jewish Activism, which is tax deductible. So you can write off anything you've donated to the Hilltop Youth, you can write off on your taxes if you itemize. That's online. If you want to do it through the regular mail, you just send checks and money orders to our post office box. You can send it to JTF if you want to support our political efforts to change the system politically in Israel, and you know, we try to influence things politically in favor of the Hilltop Youth. If you want to do that, you can support JTF. You make your check out to JTF, but it's not tax deductible because it's political. But if you want the tax deduction, you make your check or money order out to VJA. VJA stands for Voice of Jewish Activism, and you just send it, and you send the check or money order made out to VJA to the following post office: JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. That's JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. If you want to put on the top, if you want to instead address it, VJA PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365, that's also good. It'll also get there. That's fine too. So those are the two ways to support the Hilltop Youth. Let's learn this lesson. Let's learn the lesson that we have to stand for the truth and fight for the truth and not capitulate to the forces of evil. That's the lesson that should be learned from this entire drama that's being played out now in the United States and in Israel. Let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers. Let me just get this out of the way, and we'll start off with one moment. Let me just scroll down here so I can see this. And we will start off with Truth Spreader, our good friend Truth Spreader, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, please discuss these untalented musicians." Okay. I'm not sure. I don't listen to their music. I have not listened to the music of any of the five people you're listing here, Truth Spreader. I know a little bit about them because I follow the news I do read the news. I follow the news because I have to do that. That's part of my job. Representing JTF, I have to know what's going on in the news so I can do this program and so I can represent our movement. So I do follow the news and I see news headlines. And I also spend a lot of time on YouTube because I'm trying to promote what we're doing on YouTube, especially our Hebrew campaign on YouTube does have a lot of views. So I spend a lot of time on YouTube and I do see these people sometimes on YouTube, but I have never actually listened to their music. But anyway, let's see, the little that I know, let me comment on with the, and I know very little about these people, but let me comment on them with the little that I know. Number one, Bad Bunny, a disgrace to actual rabbits. Bad Bunny, the only thing I know about him is that he's a Puerto Rican so-called rapper, which means that he makes that noise that black people make when they rant with filthy mouths. That he does the same thing, and that he does it. He happens to be Puerto Rican, and he does the same thing that blacks do when they with their dirty, filthy music that makes no sense and it doesn't even rhyme. That's Bad Bunny. And the second one is JoJo Siwa. I don't know much about her, but I'm pretty sure she has no talent. Unquote. I don't know much about her either, and I'm sure she has no talent. Also, the one thing I do know about her is that she's a lesbian. That I know about her. She's a lesbian. So obviously she's bad news. Next one is Machine Gun Kelly. This is a white guy. I forgot where he's from. I think he's from Texas, but he's a white guy. He imitates, so-called rappers, he imitates black music. He imitates black music. It's not music, it's noise. But he imitates black noise. This is a white guy who has no self-respect, who feels he has to imitate people who have very low IQs, who have no talent, and who are the scum of the earth, and he wants to imitate them. So you can imagine what I think of him. Anyway, let's go on. The fourth person on the list, and that's all I know about him. The fourth person on the list is Taylor Swift, and she's actually very famous, even though I've never listened to her. But I know that she's a white slut who backs every left-wing cause under the sun. And lately, she's been running around campaigning for the left-wing Democrats and supporting left-wing Democrats and supporting the gays and the transgenders and the abortionists and all the other, the feminists and all the, every left-wing cause under the sun. A horrible person. She makes a fortune, huge amount of money, and she's generous in supporting every evil cause under the sun. And in backing every evil cause under the sun. And the fifth and final person is Katy Perry. Her I know something about. I've never listened to her so-called music, but she's a Nazi. Katy Perry's a Nazi. First of all, she's another white slut and a lesbian also. She's also a lesbian and a white slut. And her father is an evangelical pastor in Ohio. Who makes anti-Semitic sermons about rich Jews. He attacks rich Jews and makes anti-Semitic sermons about rich Jews. I wish I was a rich Jew. If I was a rich Jew, I could help the Hilltop Youth more. But anyway, makes these vicious sermons attacking the Jews and openly saying, you rich Jews, and your money smells, and you're not. Yeah, I mean, just a Nazi. I mean, just a Nazi. That's her father, her pastor father. And she's like father, like daughter. She had a birthday video or some sort of birthday event. I don't remember what, but I remember it was in the media where she had a Nazi caricature of a Jew. The type of Nazi caricatures they had of Jews, you know, that Hitler and the Nazis used to do of Jews in the 30s and 40s in Nazi Germany. She had this on her birthday video. So she's a Nazi. She's a lesbian, a pervert, a slut, and a Nazi. And those are her good qualities. Thank you. And of course I'm being facetious. Thank you, Truth Spreader. And now we go to Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes, who is going to ask us a question in Hebrew, and I'm going to quickly translate it. And Ram writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim HaTzadik, Mashlomcha, Madatcha Al HaMiftza Be'aza, Letzari Lo Yekaimu Et Gush Katif, מחדש מה היינו עושים אם אנחנו היינו בשלטון שהקדוש ברוך הוא יברך אותך באהבת ישראל רם מאיר אברהם. Okay, Ram writes that he asked me about my opinion of the latest operation in Gaza against the Hamas terrorists, which got almost no publicity in the United States, and he asked me what we would do if we were in power. Ram, im anachnu hayinu bashilton, gam Hamas vegam haravim lo hayu be'aza. Anachnu hayinu be'aza, lo rak begush katif, ela be'aza bichlal. Kol ze eretz Yisrael, ha'aravim sham lo rotzim liot sham. היה סקר ערבי שהראה ש-80% מהערבים שם רוצים לעזוב. זה כמו כלא בשבילם. זה כמו בית כלא. המחבלים של חמאס לא נותנים להם לעזוב. אנחנו היינו עוזרים להם לעזוב, והיינו מחליפים אותם עם יהודים. עזה זה חלק מארץ ישראל, ואנחנו היינו שם. And what I told Ram is that the Arabs don't want to stay there. 80% of the Arabs, according to an Arab poll, want to leave. It's like a prison. The Hamas terrorists keep them there, force them to stay there. They want to leave. We would help them leave if we were in power. And there'd be no Arabs in Gaza. They would be out. And the Jews would come in and replace them, and Gaza would be Jewish. Ani modeh lecha me'od, Ram. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, if Ted Cruz doesn't run or is the Republican candidate in 2024, who would you like to see run against Biden? Thanks. Unquote. Joe, I don't know. I don't know. You know that I'm very distrustful of politicians, Joe, and it's very rare when I support a candidate like we did with Ted Cruz. I thought he was an exception. But you know that I'm very distrustful. I do not like politicians. I think politicians are liars. I think they're corrupt. I think they're evil people, immoral people. I don't like them at all. I think you have to be a fool to think that that's a profession with honest people. It's just not. I mean, there may be rare exceptions like Ted Cruz, but they're very rare exceptions. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Joe. We're going to study the candidates and we'll see what will happen. I don't know what's going to be with Donald Trump. I think he's going to be indicted. He probably can run even if he is indicted. He might be able to run even if he is indicted. But I don't know what's going to be. And by the way, you ask about running against Biden. I'm not at all sure that Biden is going to run or that he would be the Democrat candidate. I think the Democrats are crazy if they run Biden again. Biden is absolutely senile. He has advanced Alzheimer's. And if they run him again, they're really crazy, the Democrats. That would be insane. But anyway, again, we'll study it and we'll see, Joe, and we'll all study together what the candidates are standing for, and then we'll make a decision. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks very interesting questions. And Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, one, can you give an example where Rashi cites a minority opinion about the Noahide laws? Two, can you state the actual majority opinion? Yes. I don't know if this is what you're referring to. There may be more than one instance of this, but I think the most famous thing that I could think of is the fact that Rashi agrees with the minority opinion that the Noahide laws are no longer binding on Gentiles, that the Gentiles are not required to observe the Noahide laws. Why would there be this minority opinion? And again, it's a minority opinion. You ask the majority opinion. Majority opinion is that the Gentiles are obligated to observe at least the seven commandments, the first seven commandments of the Noahide laws. They are required to do that. That's what most of Chazal, of the rabbinic scholars and sages, what their view is. But why would there be this? What is the rationale behind the opinions of both sides? Okay. The majority opinion says that the seven laws are laws that anybody could understand and that are necessary just to have a basic civilized society, and that the Gentiles, even if they obviously don't have, most Gentiles are not exposed to Jewish laws or Jewish religion or Jewish upbringing, but even so, they should be able to figure out on their own that these seven laws are basic, minimal standards that we should live by. And of course, we have the situation where they're supposed to believe in it because God gave these laws to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. That clearly very few Gentiles believe in or understand or even know that there's a requirement like that. But still, that's a conclusion they could come to, that, or that they should be able to come to. So the majority opinion is that Gentiles should come to this, that it's absolutely necessary for a civilized society, and it's absolutely essential for the Gentiles themselves to have a place in the next world, for them to abide by the Noahide laws, and that they are required to do so. That's a majority opinion. The minority opinion, which includes Rashi, who is a great, breathtakingly great commentator, by the way, and he almost always is right, but just a great, breathtaking commentator. In this case, he's in the minority opinion. But the minority opinion is that you can't compel the Gentiles, you can't hold them accountable and say, why didn't you observe the seven Noahide laws? You can't do that, because they just, there are cases where they just didn't know any better. That there are many places in the world where they're not exposed to this, and where they just don't know any better. Obviously, certain things like murder, obviously people know you're not allowed to go out and just murder innocent people, or steal or robbing, or that they should know. But some of the Noahide laws about not believing in idolatry, and about and about having laws of justice and courts of justice and so on. Some of these, the minority opinion is that there are many places where Gentiles would not know enough and are not well informed enough to observe, and they can't be punished for this in the next world. They shouldn't be punished for this. Would it be good for all the Gentiles to follow the Noahide laws? Absolutely. Is it something Jews should encourage? Absolutely. But the question is, are Gentiles required to do it? That's the issue. And a minority opinion is they're not required to do it, because they may not know enough to do it, and so you can't blame them and hold them accountable if they don't follow all of the Noahide laws. That's the minority opinion. Majority opinion is no. The Noahide laws are so clear and so obvious in terms of common sense and logic that they should follow them, and they should be required to follow them. Thank you, Hirvatsky. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, was Geraldine Ferraro nominated for VP, vice president, because she was a woman, unquote. Of course, she was completely unqualified. She was a moron. She was my congresswoman. She was a complete moron and corrupt. And there was a scandal immediately after she was picked. She was a joke. But she was nominated by Walter Mondale in 1984 because she was a woman. Just like Kamala Harris was nominated because she was a woman and because she was black. Biden promised he was going to nominate a woman for vice president. He didn't hide the fact that he nominated her because she was a woman and because she was black. Even though Kamala Harris is also a moron. Okay, second question from Binyamin is, discuss the following people. Senator Tim Kaine, 2016 Democrat vice presidential nominee. If anyone saw the debate between Senator Tim Kaine in 2016, the vice presidential debate between him and then Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who was Donald Trump's running mate, it was so embarrassing. Tim Kaine kept interrupting Mike Pence, didn't let him complete a single sentence. He was so rude and so boorish in the debate that he really turned off a lot of people, and he lost the debate disastrously. Because, you don't go into a debate where two people are supposed to be sitting down and debating each other and not give the other person a chance to even finish a sentence. Right away, jump in and interrupt him rudely. It just doesn't look good. And that's what Kaine did over and over again to Pence in 2016, and he lost the debate badly because of that. He's an embarrassment. Tim Kaine is an embarrassment. By the way, Donald Trump did the same thing to Joe Biden in their first debate in 2020. Trump was interrupting Joe Biden every 2 seconds. I mean, just didn't let him speak. Wouldn't let Joe Biden answer any questions. He jumped in while Biden was trying to answer a question. He would jump in and interrupt him constantly. It was really, really embarrassing, and Trump lost that debate disastrously. That you don't do in a debate. I'm not saying you should be aggressive, you should attack, you should be critical, you should bring out all your facts and information, but you don't act in a way which is so childish and so rude and so boorish that you don't even let the other side speak or open their mouths, that doesn't look good. It just doesn't present itself well. And the next person on Binyamin's list is James Stockdale. Oh, he was really something. That was Ross Perot's running mate in 1992. James Stockdale he started out the debate by saying, "Why am I here? What am I doing here?" And then throughout the whole debate, he was just completely confused. And at one point, he said, "Can you ask your question again? I didn't have my hearing aid on. I turned my hearing aid off." In other words, he had turned his hearing aid off during the middle of the debate. He got bored or whatever. His mind was wandering. And he didn't have his hearing aid on, so he didn't even hear the question. So he asked if they could repeat the question so he could turn his hearing aid back on. This was in the middle of the debate. I mean, just, it was so... In other words, James Stockdale was like Joe Biden, completely senile and completely out of his mind in the debate, completely in another world, which is what Joe Biden is like right now. And the next one is Pat Choate. I don't even know how you pronounce it. Choate, I have no idea. That was Perot's running mate in 1996. I don't know anything about Pat Choate. I don't know anything. I don't even know how you pronounce his name. I know nothing about him, and I don't remember anything about him from the 1996 campaign. Bradley Manning, transgender faggot who calls himself Chelsea, convicted of espionage and had his sentence commuted by Obama. He should have been sentenced to death. I mean, this is someone spying, and, you know, just the filthy, low, perverted animal. Poor Jonathan Pollard spent over 30 years in prison and then another 5 years on parole when he was released from prison. I mean, over 30 years in prison, Jonathan Pollard, when all he did is help the United States in the fight against Islamic terrorism by giving Israel information that they used to strike at Islamic terrorist targets, Islamic terrorists who were also aiming to murder Americans. So what Jonathan Pollard did was good for the United States. The information Jonathan Pollard passed on to Israel should have been passed on and was supposed to be passed on by agreements that were made by people like that anti-Semite Caspar Weinberger, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Poor Jonathan Pollard, what he went through, and this low-life transgender pervert piece of filth, he gets his sentence commuted and walks away, even though he was a spy trying to hurt, and he was trying to hurt the United States, which Pollard was not trying to do. He was trying to actually hurt the United States. What a disgrace! What a joke! And then Binyamin asks about Brittany Yvette Griner, the affirmative action basketball player and lesbian convicted of bringing drugs into Russia. She is also against the national anthem at basketball games. Yeah. I think drug dealers are like people selling poison. That's poison. I mean, that's like somebody trying to poison people. So I think they should get life imprisonment or a death sentence. That's what I think they deserve. And Na'ama Yisachar, the Israeli woman pardoned by Putin for drug charges in exchange for the Israeli Justice Ministry transferring the historic Alexander Courtyard in Jerusalem to the Russian Imperial Orthodox Palestine Society, unquote. That was disgraceful. That was disgraceful what took place. And that was Netanyahu who did that. He gave up Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem to the Russians and to the Russian Orthodox Church with all the Jewish blood they have on their hands to free this drug-dealing pig who should have been sent to Siberia and should have stayed there for the rest of her life. Disgraceful. Thank you, Binyamin, for your questions. And now we go to Roy, who writes, and I quote, "Hi, Chaim, comment on the following." Jonathan Sachs, Shem Rashaim Yirkav, a disgusting, evil, so-called chief rabbi of the United Kingdom and also a member of the House of Lords. Horrible. He tried to legitimize the Reform and Conservative cults in Britain. He would meet with the Reform and Conservative and as if they were legitimate cults. He established so-called interfaith dialogue with Muslim terrorists and Muslim Nazi so-called clergy, and he was having dialogue with them. He also had dialogue, by the way, with Christian anti-Semites as well, but the Muslims he was meeting with were really, I mean, this was just an obscenity. He was trying to legitimize the Muslim Jew haters. He received a billion awards from a billion different establishment groups. He had so many awards. If I had a shekel, shekel being the currency in Israel, if I had a shekel for every award that he received, I'd be able to give billions to the Hilltop Youth. Just disgusting individual, a horrible person. And that's why he became the so-called chief rabbi of the UK, because the establishment doesn't allow good people to get to high places. They don't appoint good people to high places. Thank you. Kim Jong Un. I don't know anything about Kim Jong Un. I don't. Roy ani lo yodea, ain't musag. I don't know anything about him. And Greta Van Susteren. Greta Van Susteren is a media whore. She had a program on Fox Television, then she moved to another station. She's a complete media prostitute who will do anything for ratings. Like 99% of the people in the media. A complete low-life whore. Thank you, Roy. And now we go to the great Naches, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, one, between communist China, the peaceful quote-unquote nation of Iran, which Naches is writing sarcastically, and Russia, who do you perceive as the worst existential threat to Israel, the United States, and the West? Right now, Iran is the great threat, because if they get nuclear weapons, they will spread that, and there's a danger they'll share that with the Islamic terrorists that they're sponsoring, and there's a danger of nuclear war because of them. So right now, they are the greatest threat. Even though China and Russia, of course, are much bigger and much more powerful than them. But Iran, really, there is a danger that this will lead to eventually to nuclear holocaust in the Middle East if the Iranians get their hands on nuclear bombs. They are the greatest threat right now. And Nachos writes, please give your take on Philo-Semitism. Philo-Semitism just means loving Jews, or I guess respecting and admiring Jews. I don't think there's very much of that around today, unfortunately. There should be, but there isn't. And I know that term is used sarcastically in Germany and other countries to say, oh, you Jew lover, you. You know, so it's used sarcastically against people. As well, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. God commands the nations of the world to defend and support the Jews and to bless the Jews. Those who don't do it go against God's laws and go against what it clearly says in the Bible, and it clearly says in the Bible that this is an eternal covenant that God made. Naches now writes to comment on these individuals. Emil Zola. I don't know anything about him other than the Dreyfus trial, what he did in the Dreyfus trial. I know that he's a French Gentile who protested when Dreyfus, who was a Jewish officer in the French army, was falsely accused of spying for Germany. And it was a complete... the whole thing was a complete frame-up. And Emil Zola... made his famous speech, I Accuse, where he made a famous speech defending Dreyfus. But aside from that, I don't know anything else about him. Naches also writes, asks about Emma Goldman. Emma Goldman was a self-hating Jewish beast who called herself an anarchist and was involved with all types of movements. She came to the United States from Russia and was involved with anarchism and communism and feminism and abortion, and this is over 100 years ago she's doing this, 120 years ago. Just unbelievable. She was also very much involved with the Nazi Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was a Nazi. She literally was a Nazi who admired and respected the Nazis and who expressed Nazi views. And that's the reason she formed Planned Parenthood, because she wanted to abort the babies of the inferior races. By the way, one of the inferior races, of course, according to Nazis, are the Jews. Amazing how the Jews could be considered inferior considering their accomplishments in the world. But anyway, Emma Goldman was good friends with Margaret Sanger and from Planned Parenthood. Emma Goldman loved communist Russia until she was deported to Russia and then was repressed there, and you know she had criticisms, even though she herself never, she was just evil, pure evil. Next, Franklin Graham. Franklin Graham's father, Billy Graham, was a vicious anti-Semite, always anti-Israel, always an anti-Semite, never forgave the Jews for not accepting Yeshu. And since Franklin Graham says that he's continuing the missionary work and the which includes trying to convert Jews, by the way, the missionary work and the preaching of his father, and always invokes his father, if he's invoking this anti-Semite, then I consider him to be just as guilty, even though I don't know of any anti-Semitic remarks he's made. But his father was very anti-Israel and very anti-Semitic, and you know, so if he's continuing in his father's footsteps, that means he's bad, and I certainly regard him as bad because of that. Mel Gibson, of course, all these people I'm bringing up now, Nachas is asking about Mel Gibson, of course, is a Nazi. Just an out-and-out Nazi. He did the Nazi movie where he makes the Jews, you know, he stereotypes the Jews the way Hitler would have done, with the crucifixion and everything else, and accuses the Jews of everything under the sun. Just a Nazi. And of course, every time this alcoholic pig gets drunk, he blames the Jews. He blames the Jews for all the world. He said the Jews are responsible for all the world's problems, which is something that his Führer Hitler also said. Next is Dov Shurin. Dov Shurin was a singer that I knew very well in the United States. He made Aliyah, I think, 30 or 40 years ago. I don't know exactly when, but I know he made Aliyah many, many years ago. He lives in Israel now. Dov Shurin is a talented singer, a very talented singer, and a very good Jew. Next, Herb Alpert. Herb Alpert is a very bad Jew. Herb Alpert is a self-hating Jewish traitor. He was a 60s musician. He formed foundations that have given tens of millions of dollars to black Jew haters. And in Israel, he formed a foundation that brings Arab and Jewish teenagers together to show the Jews how nice the Arabs are, and how we're supposed to be friendly with them and maybe even intermarry with them. You know, the Arabs are wonderful. In other words, sessions to brainwash Jews on how they should admire the Arabs and respect the Arabs and get together with the Arabs, and go out on dates with the Arabs, and this is what he promotes in Israel. Unfortunately, he's still alive. He's 87 years old or 88 years old. I don't know exactly, but he's in his late 80s, and unfortunately, he's still alive. And of course, the Arabs go to these sessions doing taqiyah. Taqiyah meaning the deception, when Muslims are commanded to lie to non-Muslim infidels. And they do taqiyah, but the imbecilic Jews go there and are brainwashed by all of this. And the final person on the list is Sid Caesar. Sid Caesar, of course, was a 1950s very famous Jewish comedian and actor. He had a show on TV for many, many years. Big, highly rated show on TV, but he burned himself out in the 50s, you know, doing shows, constant comedy shows. You know, it's very hard to do that on a constant basis for years and come up with fresh material, so he burned himself out, basically. And he got involved with drugs, and I don't mean heroin or things like that, but, you know, sleeping pills, and then painkillers, and then, you know, prescription drugs. And he became addicted, and he also started drinking, and so he had some serious problems. But he was a very talented Jewish comedian and actor. Thank you very much, Nachas. And Nachas also writes, God bless you. God bless you, Nachas. Nachas is one of the truly great JTFers. And I want to thank everybody for another program of JTF that I very much enjoy doing. We've got to work to make this a better world. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world, and we can change Jewish history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.